welcome to this, the second Irish Wolves podcast. If you were listening in last week, you heard me talking to Dave Rothwell and Mick McQuillan about the first Irish Wolves supporters club in the early mid-90s. And today we're going to continue that conversation. And Dave is going to start us off talking about just the situation around the supporters club and how it was developing in the early 90s. Hiya, Dave.
Hiya, Tony. It wasn't probably an official supporters club where we used to meet up every month or two and, you know, pay a membership fee or anything like that. It was just kind of informally, if there was a match on, a few people might meet up. If they weren't at it, and other people would go to the game and stuff. So it was once we kind of made the initial contact, we pretty much just hung around with the people they liked and made their own deep. So, as I said, I was in a relatively small group. There was probably myself, Mick, Damien, Ernie, all from Belfast, a couple of others, and other groups of Irish people done similar in their own little groups. I know John Howes was quite friendly with Alan Richardson and Jerry Markey and stuff like that. They done their own thing, so
yeah.
That's kind of how we went, wasn't it, Mick, really?
Yeah. The problem that originally, I suppose, that fucked everything up was the two lads, they didn't want to put the work in, but they wanted the cream. As you've seen there, I didn't realise that he had that in the programme, that he was responsible for it, but it made sense. Yeah. But the problem was that when we organised to go over there, Damien would contact the hotels. We did all that. But the problem was I remember the wives were over and they were complaining that we waiting hadn't set everything up for them the whole day. They wanted someone to mind their hand. Then they wanted to get rid of Damien from that position. That they were moaning all the way back in the plane over it. And that's basically what happened. It was at that meeting that night, and there was a good crowd that night. The main body to haul back. Damien, I backed Damien big time on that one. And then basically just happened that Roy had to finish. One of them got very stroppy. And I said to him, I said, who the fuck do you support? And he turned out he supported Liverpool. I said, what the fuck are you doing in here? And the next thing he threw out, he gave me a fucking box.
Yeah.
And that's, then that's, the table went up, whatever. And then if you remember the fleet, Dave, there's two or three doors down, we're upstairs. And he ran out one way and I went the other way, and I think someone else ran the other step, and unfortunately for them, he was caught in between the two of us.
Yeah.
And that was the end, because they didn't want all the hassle. We said, look, I wasn't going to be setting things up and babysitting everybody else, because when I went over to what the match would happen, I wanted to enjoy myself, not worry what so-and-so was doing. What all we were doing was the push. Place that what could go on if we had a meeting with a Wolves player that everybody knew about us. That's basically what happened. And as you said, you're right, there's a lot of fellas, as you say, Dave, used to go over regularly. Only about 8, 9, 10, 11. Then there was others with a lot more. And that's the way it was. And everybody knew how to contact us.
As Mick says, like, you know, originally Alan said, look, I'll take on responsibilities and I'll route things through me. But then he was always saying to us, it cost me a fortune. I rang Wolverhampton and I hung up the phone. Now, you have to remember back then, obviously, telecommunications and stuff like that were a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
So he used to ring Wolverhampton and you could have to ring the ticket office and then you might be on hold for 20 minutes while they're trying to find someone. I give you an answer. And he'd be hanging up the phone and say, oh, that cost me a fortune. The lease is giving out to me. I'm not doing that. And, you know, ringing members around the country. You know, I'm not doing any of that. And so, well, look, you volunteered for the role. So Damien came along and Damien said, I can ring anybody, and I don't give a shit. And he said, right, Damien, off you go. So because Damien had the time on his hands, and you know what Damien's like, he's a pest at the best of times, he used to like ring Wolverhampton and literally just sit on the phone for hours until the person he wanted to speak to spoke to him.
And
he had all the time in the world to do this. But Damien then, by doing this, in fairness to him, he got us contacts, he got us in touch with the right people, he was able to get us people that knew how to get tickets.
Yeah.
When we went, like myself and Damien went over, I think we were the only two to go over, we went over to Steve Wolves testimonial. We went over in the ferry. Wolves played Santos from Brazil, Pele's old team. And myself and Damien went over and we got invited up by Jack Hayward up into the box. So we had to go in a suit and tie kind of thing and sat up there and met Melly, Graham Turner and Steve Bull and all these people after the match. And Damien arranged all that sort of stuff, you know. So the other guys in the group got a bit, their nose got a bit put out of joint. Well, how come Damien knows this and Damien got this and Damien was, you know, he's the bloke that rings everybody and irritates the shit out of him and kind of, you know, keeps the club kind of on the radar and stuff. And obviously the people who'd lost out in that kind of battle didn't take too kindly to it. That was kind of the undertone, I suppose, where the fight came from then. They kind of, Damien's a big guy, but he's very kind of placid. and they kind of tried to intimidate and take it out on Damien, and a few other people stuck up for him and stuff like that. And you know, we kind of, as I said, we kind of split, and some people went one way and some people went other ways. And subsequently, you know, the likes of Ernie and stuff, you know, levitated back to our sides, because he realised, I suppose, maybe, I don't know whether we were right or wrong enough, but certainly that if he wanted to go to games and go regularly and have a bit of banter and crack, we were the people to go with, you know.
Yeah.
And having met Ernie a good few times, that's exactly what he wants, just to have a bit of a laugh, a few points and a bit, you know, a bit of fun. He's a lovely guy.
You know, I was going to say Ernie 25 or 30 years ago, he's not nearly a very different character than the Ernie you'd seen from 4 or 5 years ago. You know, a real ladies man, real man for the point, out all night chasing women around the place, and you know, great fabric.
He kind of settled down the last few years, I think. Would that be right, Mick?
I have a lot of time for Ernie. He was one of life's characters.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. He definitely was, yeah.
He went into the Witherspoons and there'd be a bunch of women in the corner. There could be 15 or 20, and you're sure, you know, Ernie's in the middle of them, you know. he was like that. But anyway, he was good. Regards to Paul Malloy, Paul was, how he, Mrs. actually made contact with me. She didn't want them travelling over on his own and things like that. So Paul, the reason he knew myself or Dave or even Ernie were going over quite regularly, and he knew if he needed someone he could ring. And he always came up. When I was living up in Coolock there, he used to come up and stay over. So he'd be there for the flight in the morning time. Or if I was heading over in the car, that we come across in the ferry. And that's how. And that's why him and Ernie are great buddies.
Yeah.
You know, we're great buddies, you know what I mean?
But what was the first game that you went to? Just yourselves, as you know, as your first Wolves game that you went over to.
I'll probably go, because it might be a lot easier to talk about. Well, like, obviously the one with the Portsmouth one was the first one I kind of went off my own steam, but I had been at a game back in 80, let me see what age am I, it would have been 88, Wolves played Swansea, and it was a Friday night game. I was staying over in Leicester in my auntie's house, and my uncle drove me down because he knew I had a bit of a soft spot for Wolves, so he drove me down from Leicester to Wolverhampton, and we went to that game. Wolves won 4-0, and that would have been my first one, and then my second one wouldn't have been until you know, that Portsmouth game in 95. Well, barring obviously I'd seen Wolves playing Bowls in a friendly back in the early 80s as a young fella, but my memories of that would be hazy. But that officially, I wasn't a Wolves fan at that stage. That possibly is what made me a Wolves fan.
Yeah.
But that would have been mine. Now, Mick's would be a lot earlier than that.
Yeah. Well, my first game was 1968.
Yeah.
Sheffield Wednesday. I was only about 15, 21st of December, it was a Christmas period, and my brother was saying, oh, I was over in England, and went over there to meet him, and said me answer, he brought me up to a game, Wolves Sheffield Wednesday. We got beaten 3-0, we had beaten them earlier in the season away 2-0, and we got beaten 3-0, so that didn't set me up for, you know, to be too hopeful for future. But that was my first game. And then my next game would have been around 1970 when I started to work. And then I was able to go across. And then from the 70s up till 78, I was over nearly, I wouldn't have missed many home games for that period. I used to go across mainly on the boat and that. And that was that. 78 to 80, I probably wouldn't have gone over much. I was either getting married and that. And then from the 80s to whatever, I had the League Cup. I went to both League Cups, plus the playoff, or the Frey Rover, and quite a lot of games in the meantime, but not mostly on Easter or bank holidays, where I would bring the family over, take in Alton Towers. But from the 80s to 86, I always brought over a team to England at Easter and played about 3 or 4 games. You could be over there for 10 days. But we always took in those Easter games and home and away. Again, in the 80s, 90s, I was back over there again and went to a number of games. Again, bringing the family, could be 4 times a year. And then we got involved with the Irish Wolves that time. And again, met Dave when you were getting people that was going over more regularly. It was handy to go over. And I know that then from, I think it was around, remember, that on, I was over quite regularly. I used to get a lot of games in.
Yeah.
And as you know.
I started going over regularly in 2006, 2007, but that's probably when I would have bumped into you first.
Yeah.
And you would have been going fairly regularly then, you know?
Yeah, I think obviously the fact that Ryanair kind of came on the scene in a big way kind of late 90s, early 2000s, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there was games, a lot of games where myself, and I can remember this, we were paying 1 pence each way and, you know, 99 cents return and all these sorts of prices.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could book flights and you didn't give a shit if Sky Sports moved it to a Monday or something because you go, look, I've only lost the fiver. So, like, pictures would come out, and I remember like the pictures would come out, and I could sit down and I could book 25 games between between, you know, August and January, and it might cost me £300 or something, you know, and you literally were getting nearly all the things for, you know, you knew, for example, you know, particularly if you were in the Championship at the time, not many games were going to be moved. You knew that they were going to more than likely stay on a Saturday. So if you booked, you know, the 8:30 into Birmingham and the 10 p.m. fly home or whatever, you were going to get the game no matter what, if you moved it to noon or moved 5 o'clock or whatever. And same then for, you know, going to Newcastle or, you know, into London or whatever if you were playing away. So myself and Mick used to do that a lot. You know, you kind of book months in advance, and it might fail on you the odd time, but you certainly got value for money in doing.
Happened in my case in 2001. The missus died, and it was a good friend of mine was saying, because I was working, I was trying, there was a lot of things on my plate at the time, and I remember he saying to me, Dennis Hill, football, he just said to me, you need to sort yourself out, have a bit of time for yourself, and because you hit the boards fairly quickly. So he said, you're into football, he says, why not get yourself a season ticket again, I'm on you, and go over there and just leave Saturday to your game. And that's what I done. Because with all the pressures of working during the week and kids and all that, Saturday was my day, and that's what I done, and that's how I ended up going home and away, and that's how I'm still doing the same fucking thing, you know. Because it's something you like, Tony, as you know, and Dave, you know, I get a lot more kick out of the people you meet and the crack that you have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And winding fellas fucking up. And that to me is football. And like we talk about Tommy, but the three of us know Tommy. You know what I mean? Yeah. I love winding that fucker up, you know.
You don't stop at him, Mick.
But you know the band, Dan, you do meet characters. You're like,
yeah,
you know, we met, remember Lawrence in the train? Dave, you probably a couple of fellas. I coming back in the plane that day that were stuck in the chute, and your man started doing the chicken.
Oh, yeah. That was in Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah, Birmingham. Do you remember that?
He started just a big guy. And we were all waiting. I don't know what the delay was, but we were standing in the ramp down to the train for about 10 or 15 minutes. And of course, these guys always seem to stand in front or beside or behind us, because we always seem to attract them. And he started clucking. You know, he just started
fucking gobbling chicken.
And the action. And beside you, I suppose.
No, he wasn't fucking drunk. He was just off his fucking rocker.
Yeah.
And he's going across. What the fuck is this?
Could have been claustrophobic or something, I don't know, but he was clucking away. We were getting a bit worried. But
there's matches where I literally don't even remember getting on the flight to get home, and I don't know how I was able to get on the flight to get home. You know, Mick, you'll remember the famous day that the Liverpool match got bounced.
Oh,
geez. And I think yourself and Mark had to literally carry me onto that flight. The match, Tony, we got into the pub obviously at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But I think it was a 12:30 kickoff against Liverpool, was it? I don't know, maybe it was a 3 o'clock, but anyway, the game got called off, and we literally sat in that pub from 9 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock in the evening until it was time to go back to Birmingham. And only then, you know yourself, when you walk outside, the air hits you, gone.
That was the Liverpool game.
Ernie was there with his. We were in the Mill Underwater, Mick, and it got called off. It was the week before Christmas, and it got called off. And then he ended up playing it in January, and me and you went back. It was the night that we met them two blokes that had bought the pub, and they bought us the drink all night. Remember that?
Stop the lines, you know. But
there's some games, genuinely, Tony. I got to the stage then as well, where I had a couple of friends that used to go to watch United every week, and so they used to go home and away with Man United. So if Wolves played United, or, you know, United played in Villa, or, you know, Wolves played in Man City or Port or whatever it was, we'd go for the weekend. And Manchester, they'd come for the weekend in Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd great. Vinny, Mick will tell you, you know, the likes of Wayne and Vinny and Trevor and stuff like that, that Mick, you know, over the years. And when we were together like that in a gang, particularly me and my lads, like, I don't know how we were a danger to ourselves and everybody else on the flight home. And I don't know how we never got, like, literally got left behind, you know, but we'd always just make it home somehow. But absolutely disgraceful thing. Kind of got through Birmingham Airport.
I remember, Dave, two things. There's another fella quite similar to yourself in our group, Eric, okay? And he's forever missing the fucking threat, missing the flight. And he drinks with the lads from Dudley, and they drink him under the table. And he got on a train from Nottingham, heading to International, and he ended up down, where was it, Leamington Spa? Anyway, something that you done and something he done was unbelievable. The same thing he's done. Myself and I had Cahill with me on both occasions, and we were coming up to the what do you call it, the air bridge in Birmingham, and both occasions, it's both different occasions, but you and with him. And Cottle says, there's Dave, you were lining up against the fucking thing, fast asleep.
The monorail, was it?
Now, you had to press for the rail to come, but they were fast asleep waiting in the fucking rail. So they were joked. Eric done the same a couple of years ago. I got Then I said, Dave, when we used to get on the train from Wolverhampton, and in the evening, you'd be fucking tired, but the heat on the train, I would have drink, and you'd be nodding off. Yeah. So, Dave, you used to stand up, and I think I said to you, I had fucking overstepped me once, and you said, the reason I stand up is that if I fall over, I wake up, you know, if I do fall asleep.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I used to do it,
yeah.
You have to remember the levels of drinking you used, you know, the levels of drinking you used to do, Tony, where I remember I used to meet these two guys. My flight used to get over there at 6:30 on a Saturday morning, and sometimes Mick could be on a later flight or whatever, but I used to always get to 6:30, so arrive in Wolverhampton about 8:20, go and have a breakfast in Asda or the DHS, and then go down to the Witherspoons for about 9-ish when it opened. And it was always these two guys that come up from Wales, and two Wolves fans that come up from Wales every week, and I used to go drinking with the pair of them. And there was one particular, Dave, and I can't remember, one of them's definitely called Dave, I can't remember what the other fellow was called anyway, but two sound blokes now, but I used to drink with them every week. And there was this vodka bar opened, a new vodka bar in Wolverhampton one week, and Wolves were playing Leeds, and all my mates were actually over with me. United were playing Villa in the FA Cup that evening, and Dave went to Birmingham and I went up to Wolverhampton, and we arranged I'd go and meet them after the Wolves managed to go to the Villa game anyway.
Yeah.
So up I went to this vodka bar. They had this new vodka that was 90%, and by law they were only allowed to serve you two shots of it.
Yeah.
So one of the guys went up to the bar to order three shots, because one each, but he says we can only sell you two by law. So for some reason we all decided to have two then instead of having one. So I watched the match. This is no word of a lie. I watched Wolves and Leeds with one hand over my eye, because I was seeing two of everything. I was literally seeing two of everything. And this was a 12:30 kickoff. So I was literally wasted. I was seeing two of everything. So I had to watch the match like that to see only one football and one of each player. And then after 5 or 10 minutes, that eye would get sore. So I stood like that, and then I'd watch it through the other eye. And that's how I watched 90 minutes of football, because I was just so drunk for the 12:30 kickoff.
Yeah.
Because we are drinking 90% vodka before the match. So I'm this used to be a fairly regular occurrence. And, you know, you drink all day, and then you're trying to get on a train back to Birmingham International and not fall asleep and not go past or stop and end up in Coventry or somewhere. You know, so it was a danger. So that's why I used to stand up, as Mick said.
Yeah.
But Dave, in all the time you went over there, what would be the best game you have actually gone? What would you reckon?
My favourite one, 100% without doubt, is Ellen Road for the FA Cup game that was having yourself went to.
Yeah, that was brilliant. That
had everything start to finish.
Yeah.
I was, Tony, Mick will tell you this. We were about 15 rows back maybe, and 6 or 7 seats in from the end of the row, and scored, and somehow I was on the pitch getting pulled off, and no idea how I got there. Literally, no idea.
I was just saying, suddenly
I was getting reefed off the pitch.
It's the quarter final, was it?
Yeah. They were getting a penalty or something, wasn't it? Your man was on the dive and got a penalty. It was saved. Don Goodman scored.
We scored with 10 minutes to go, and then they got a penalty in injury time. Robbie King gave away a penalty.
Yeah.
And Hans Sager saved it. And it was the last 10 or 15 minutes of that was by far and away the best atmosphere I've personally ever experienced.
It was about
8,000 Wolves fans behind the goal.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, it was nuts. You know, this is no word of a lie, Tony. It might have been probably the loudest atmosphere I've ever been at a Wolves game in Molyneux, but certainly the best atmosphere I was ever at in Molyneux in terms of just overall fun and the giddiness and the songs and the banter and the crack was Wolves lost 6-0 to Southampton at home.
Famous game.
Yeah, I do.
And genuine, I tell people this all the time and people don't believe me. We lost 6-0 and we could have won.
Southampton had,
I think, 5 attacks and somehow scored 6 goals. One of them was an OG and 5 shots on goal. And Wolves, I think, missed 2 penalties. Hit the crossbar about 4 times, had about 6 offside goals. It was just mental. And Wolves lost 6-0 and genuinely were probably the better team on the day.
Yeah.
But it was just so funny. And the more the goals went in, the more people only could do was laugh. And by the last 10 minutes, the atmosphere was just unbelievable. Like the noise and the singing and the songs, and it was just crazy, even though we lost 6-0.
Yeah,
that'll always be memorable to me.
I would reckon that now, at all the time I've been at games, the two best atmospheres that I can remember was last year when we came back against City. In that game, even the half time, there was so much. Remember, we went 2 down And everything had gone against us. But even the first half, the atmosphere was electric. And you knew at half time, there was going to be, you know, they weren't going to lie down and take 2-0. And we came back and beat them. The atmosphere that night was absolutely... And the other one was the cup match against United. That was... In fairness to the ground, they had everybody whipped up for that game.
Yeah.
Remember, they had the tinsel, the whole lot. And there's a few United fans there. I had one or two relations of mine. I got them tickets there. You know, the fans are there. And that's what they said to me after. Jesus, they really had that crowd rip up tonight. And, you know, we go back to what's happening today. That team that we have is a big game team. And the atmosphere, they're missing it big time. And that's what's missing big time this year. I know Winnie Bolly is a huge loss at the back. He's such a good fucking player for us. I know him and Ed up front, but the crowd were worth, you know, an extra man or two. Because another great atmosphere was down at Bristol City, where we come back and beat them 2-1 after going 1-0. I had the great pleasure of being at that game. And I think it's a fantastic stadium, that is, when it has the crowd. I was having been down a couple of weeks before that. I went down to, because Wolves match was off, I went down to see Cardiff playing Bristol City. And I was just as a neutral, I went in there and I said, geez, I'm not missing the Wolves game down here, you know. And another one. And, you know, they stick the Leeds match again, fantastic. You look at the Wembley matches, but those had, they had the atmosphere in the ground them couple of nights. And their teams, I'd never forget, you know.
I think the lights certainly helped.
I like the lights, yeah.
I was going to say, the United Cup game, a night game, Saturday night, and you know, it is really special. I mean, and not just the Premier League or the FA Cup, but thinking back to games that turned around, was the Leeds game. I think it was the bank holiday weekend, and I think we were 1-1, 3-1, back to 3-3, and then Edwards flicked in the header in injury time to win 4-3. That was the champ. I think it was the year before Nuno came in the championship. And we'd won with us, who claimed he was on an early flight back, that he actually saw the winning goal before he headed to the airport. You know who I'm talking about, Mick.
I do, yeah.
And we never believe him.
Northern Bretton, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. No, it's it. So even daytime, nighttime, it's a special ground.
Yeah,
the crowd.
Also, was another great day. It was the day in the Premier League when not an awful lot went for us that season in the Premier League. The first time in 2003, 2004, not an awful lot went for us. But we bet Man United in the January, I think it was, or the February maybe.
Yeah.
We bet Man United 1-0 and Kenny Miller scored. Now that was another great atmosphere. Myself and Mick and that had sourced a couple of tickets, and my mates had come over, but most of them were in the United end anyway. They got tickets, so they were in the United end. But Mick had got tickets in the Grain Youth Stand for some relation of his. We've given them this big lecture in the pub beforehand. Now, when United score, don't fucking jump up and don't fucking do anything obvious, because you'll get the head ticked off you and they'll know that their career tickets and you won't get tickets the next time and all that. So you just fucking sit there when United score, don't do anything. But we never told them, well, if Wolves score, you better fucking jump up and celebrate. That never crossed our mind that Wolves might score. So United are baiting the shit out of us for the whole game and they're sitting on their hands. And next thing, Wolves score against the run of play and the two of them sit there and are afraid to do anything. So then obviously the whole crowd knows that they're Man United fans by default. Well, we've given them all this lessons before the match is what to do, but we never even considered the possibility of Wolves winning. Like, it was funny, you know.
They played the part too well.
But that was a 12:30 kickoff too, Dave, on the Saturday.
Yeah.
I know, because we were drinking at 2:00 the following morning. there was a wedding reception in the hotel we were in, and we were in that wedding reception. But that was a great time. It went together. But another thing that comes to mind, Dave, was, do you remember, same season, we're in the league, and we had played on the Saturday, and we played Charlton again in the league, and they hammered us 4-0, and we were absolutely dire at Molyneux, and we got into the train, and I've never seen the train from Wolverhampton to Birmingham so quiet. People were saying, holy shit, we're playing United on Tuesday down at Old Trafford, you know. And we knew we were coming over it, and we were dreading heading across. And then we played that bloody game, and we were so unlucky not to have got something out of it. And our lad missed a sitter.
Yeah, that was Ronaldo's first ever match for Man United at Old Trafford.
Was it?
Yeah, that was United. They bet us 1-0 and Henri Kamara missed it out four chances to get us an equaliser late in the game or whatever. He'd done everything but score. That was a very encouraging performance actually, but the season never really followed up on it.
But it had some of the games, you know, but that was a good one. And then another one that you talk about, one you want to forget. I was down at, I don't know whether you were at this one, Dave, or maybe you were, down at the Hartons, and Keith Core was playing at the back for Wolves, and he was marking, what you call your man, that fucking Hewitt. And he was having a blinder. And we had the whole, it was a Smedics End, was it, stand. It was about 4,000 or 5,000.
And
we were given this thing, there's only one Keith Core. And he turns around and he puts the ball in the back of his own fucking net. And you had the three rest of the ground singing back to us, there's only one Keith Core. And then they beat us. And when the next game was up at Molyneux, they were singing there's only one Keith Core. And he turns around and wants to give away a penalty.
Yeah.
And it was a disaster. I'll never forget that chance.
Am I wrong in saying he missed the penalty in a derby as well, Mick?
I think he missed the penalty against
West Brom as well.
He was a disaster.
The derby wasn't his fixture anyway.
You weren't there today, the problem.
That was another game like, where everybody had to walk down. No.
Yeah. No, you weren't there that day. No.
No, I wasn't. No. The last time I was at West Brom actually was when we lost the playoff semi-final against them. That's the last time I've been in the Hawthorn. Okay. Mick McCarthy, remember we made the playoffs. We weren't expecting to make the playoffs.
Yeah,
we were going to have a bad season. We made the playoffs and we got beat by West Brom.
Mixed fourth season, wasn't it?
That was my last time there.
Yeah, it was.
And in fairness, like that was the season we lost 6-0 to Southampton and stuff. You know, nobody expected anything. I remember McCarthy taking over before the season started, and I think we had 12 registered players and days away.
He had eight players, and he went on this run, and then he had some young fellas out of the academy to make up the numbers. Because what happened was, Hoddle had used all the money, and Hoddle had left about a week or two before the kickoff of the season. And McCarthy had to come in. He got little to nothing, and in fairness to him, he worked miracles that season.
Yeah,
we just missed out.
Yeah, he absolutely did. Yeah, I have to remember, like that was maybe two or three years after West Brom had caught us from about 50 points behind, and you know any other team chasing us wouldn't have bottled it, but he bottled second, and West Brom caught us for second and stuff. So there was a period of 3 or 4 years around there where just everything done against them seemed to go wrong, and they had all the luck, you know.
But you think when we finally did win the playoff and get up, what were your feelings then when we actually in the Premier League? A lot of people say that Sir Jack didn't kind of put the money in that Jones would have looked for, you know. And how was your feelings on that season and that end of it?
Yeah, I'd agree. I thought, no, I don't think we didn't spend what we should have spent, really. Mick, you might have a different opinion, but I felt, yeah, we didn't make the most of what we could have done. There was money in the Premier League, obviously. It was a big thing to get up, but it's not like now, I think, where you know we are going to, you know, you did get parachute payments and stuff, but now the money's astronomical and you can afford to spend 100 or 200 million without thinking about it.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, you still had to probably balance the books and be wise, and players wouldn't sign for clubs like Wolves unless you guaranteed them the money, even if you went down and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a bit different, but Mick, you might have a different view.
My opinion on what happened was, leading up to that, I'm talking about previous years, Jack Hayward had put a lot of money in and they brought in big name players. They were on big contracts.
Yeah.
And as he called himself, he was a golden tip. To me, he's been bled dry. I just don't think that Jack Hayward had a lot of confidence in Dave Jones as the manager.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was prepared to give him a lot of money to spend. And I think that's what the problem was.
Yeah.
And you know, and Jack had a bit of problems himself, not so much with his own money. He was fighting a big battle with his own family because they tried to get him fucking sectioned. They reckon he was mad because they didn't want him giving money. They wanted that as their inheritance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because remember he ended up charging his own son, but they were fleecing him or whatever. In Wolves and that. And that was around that time, you know, and that would be my take on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For me, Tony, though, I suppose Premier League probably was, I started supporting Wolves as a young fella, kind of, you know, I don't know the name or the colours of the shirt or something, but it would have coincided. My first memory of Wolves is basically, give or take, them getting relegated from the first division. And then in the following three seasons, they were down again. So, you know, I was a kid, you know, ninth, fourth, and team in the fourth division, just, you know, and any interest in football had just been them relegated.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, at that stage, 24, 25 years of age, and I'd never seen Wolves playing Man United or Liverpool or these sorts of teams.
Yeah.
We just hadn't played them. Or, you know, we were at a cup game against Villa, a League Cup quarter final, and, you know, we'd had a couple of games against Leeds and the FA Cup and other big games like that. But I'd literally never seen Wolves. I'd seen them playing Chelsea in an FA Cup quarter final.
Yeah.
But I'd never seen them playing Man United. I'd never seen them playing Liverpool. We played Arsenal in the Cup. But teams that your mates follow in Ireland and stuff like that, Liverpool United. And Wolves had literally never played them. And I was 25 years of age or whatever. So for me, to get to go to all these new stadiums and that I hadn't, you know, you'd heard about and you'd seen. That was a big part of it. But also just to actually have banter with people I knew that Wolves were going to play these teams, because it had never happened in my whole life.
Yeah.
So to me, that was the thing I was kind of looking forward to most about getting to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Even if we did get a hiding every week, you know.
Yeah. Just thinking when they say about like the Premier League, like I think the year before we won the playoff, we beat Newcastle in the Cup in January, I think, at Molyneux. It was 3-2. It was a classic game. And just when you say the Premier League and Bellamy, when he was going off the pitch, was pointing at the, you know, we were talking earlier on about the importance of the Cup and everything, but Bellamy's idea was you might beat us in the Cup, but we're Premier League. I still remember, I can still see that. Greats on you.
It was Kevin Muscat, Nick, wasn't he? He'd been winding them up all game and he kicked the shit out of him. So him and Muscat were kind of going at it, walking off the pitch.
Muscat got us.
Yeah, as I said earlier, that was my 25th birthday.
Yeah.
I
was at that. That was nearly. I was there. It was in that stand when he done that. You know what I mean? What a prick. But that was good times. Then, you know, another big I remember was in 77 when we played Liverpool in the last match of the season.
Yeah.
And they needed to win the league. We needed to win to stay up. And I remember going over on the fucking boat and travelling up all the way to Wolverhampton on the train. And it was like being on a train from Calcutta. There was bodies hanging everywhere that was overflowing.
Yeah.
And we got up to Molyneux. And there was a midweek game, and we scored first. I think it was Steve Kindle scored, and then they came back and they beat us 3-1, and we were relegated, and I was sick. But the biggest problem for me was I'd have travelled all the way back down to Liverpool on the same track, and they fucking spat at me and everything. I never forget it, because people used to always tell me, you know, how good Liverpool supporters were.
Yeah.
But that to me, that night, I never forget that. But I remember being like, all of you, there was 50, official 53,000 inside. There was another 20,000 locked out. How people went and killed that night was beyond me. Because they broke the doors down. So there was everybody just moved in. So that was thinking of Liverpool. And then my next would be Liverpool Day, where myself, yourself, Ernie, I don't know who else it was, walked into the Liverpool bar just opposite the gates in Wolves gear before a match. And your man says, "Hey, what the fuck are you doing there, the Liverpool fan?" I said, "What do you fucking think? An Irish man in the pub? What do you think? Looking for a fucking drink?" And we had a great sing song. We got great banter in that pub that night, that day. Was that the day of the big win, was it?
Yeah, lost 1-0.
Yeah, we have to travel over.
Manchester. We ran into my mate.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we collected my mate on the way and had to cover him for the night. Yeah, that was that one. Yeah, but cap it all off. We lost by 93rd minute goal. 1-0.
Lovely. Anyway, lads, we've run out of time, so it's been a great night talking to you both.
Cheers, Tony.
You'll have your work cut out trying to edit that, Tony.
That's been the first bit to go. I'd see you, right? Take care, guys. We'll see you again. We'll be in touch. See you. Good luck. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Join us again next week for some more Wolves tales from years gone by. If you'd like to find out more information about Irish Wolves, you can log on to our website at www.irishwolves.org, or you can have a look at our Facebook page, Irish Wolves. See you next week.